This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Matthew, let me bring you back over here. Just get a bit of level off your voice. Tell me what you had for breakfast.
I had 3 silk cut and a black coffee.
That's my breakfast of choice. Those days have gone.
My kind of man.
Yeah, that's my kind of breakfast. Lovely. Hello and welcome to The Great Indoors,
the podcast which reveals everything you ever needed to know about interiors and explains how to make it all really work for you in your home.
I'm Kate Watson-Smythe.
And I'm Sophie Robinson. And let me just describe the most amazing space I'm standing in right now. It's giving me all the squeals, delicious colours, oversized vintage chandeliers.
She's speechless. She's speechless with joy. I shall take over. I am leaning against a cobalt blue front door, which could actually have come from your house. Against a candy pink wall with a mint green architrave.
I know, it's amazing. It's amazing. And have you seen the French doors and shutters through this living space onto their
in
garden?
Turquoise.
Yeah.
Who? Oh, are we going through the keyhole?
Yes. And so
who? What's the line? Who lives in a house like this?
Well, not to keep the suspense any longer, this is the incredible home of the designer Matthew Williamson. A Guardian headline once summed up Matthew's career as from fashion star to interior czar, which says it all, really. After years designing clothes adored by A-listers from Sienna Miller to the Duchess of Cambridge, Matthew has recently focused more on his passion for interiors. He has designed ranges of rugs, wallpaper, furniture, as well as incredible hotel rooms in London, Oxfordshire, and Mallorca. And of course, most importantly, he has appeared as a guest judge on the hit BBC Two show, Interior Design Masters. And as he is quoted as saying, "I'm fascinated with creating spaces which evoke a sense of joy, optimism and personality, and that is singing from my hymn sheet." So thanks so much for having us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Welcome. Hi, guys.
Very exciting. So we're in your, I feel like we should say, drawing room. But what do we call this room?
You can call it drawing room. That's very grand. But yeah, I suppose it is a grand room, isn't it? It's got a beautiful sort of barrel shape to it, these lovely curved walls.
It's got this amazing curved door, and the parquet floor, I notice, is curved to match it. Mm. I mean, that's incredible. Is this an original door?
Yeah, it's been here for a very long time. I was luckily inherited it, as you know, the bones of this apartment are so beautiful and original. Yeah, it was definitely a love at first sight home for me. I bought it about 7 years ago, I think, and knew instantly the minute I opened that Cobalt Blue door, which wasn't cobalt blue,
yeah.
I sort of knew I got that tingling feeling that I kind of didn't need to see any other room. So, yeah, I'm very lucky to live here.
This room's like a really good size, isn't it? And I can see, you know, it's multifunctional. There's a desk in here. You clearly work from this space, as well as seating area. And then obviously there's a dining table as well in that amazing sort of curved bay. So is this the room you hang out in most?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I live here part-time. I have another home in Mallorca. So what you're looking at is a sort of work in progress. I guess this interior was designed 4 or 5 years ago. So I'm in the process of updating.
Are you? What are you going to do?
Well, like you say, I guess the first thing with the current state of things, this space, I'm lucky that it's large enough to start thinking about, I hate the word zoning, but you know.
Oh, go on, I'm going to do some zoning.
What do you like to call it if you're
I
not zoning?
I don't know, I just feel a bit naff saying it.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But I somehow feel it explains, you know, yeah. The fact that it does need to work as a multifunctional space. I think most people will be feeling that at the moment. So, yeah, I'm just sort of embarking on how to do that.
Well, I mean, overall, it's a really impressive room to walk into. And I actually think it's really charming that it's clearly your creative space. I mean, just for our listeners, there's a lovely wall here that's just covered in printouts. And I'm guessing this is giving us a sneak preview of some of your product designs that are on the horizon. Can we have a look? Come on,
yeah,
I want to have a nosy.
Is it all secret?
I know, this is great.
Well, it's kind of about to go onto a website in a few weeks. I've had a long ambition to have an online homeware shop. So I've now established 8 categories of product that go from lighting to wallpapers, rugs, tabletop, furniture.
Loving the furniture.
That wow. Painted furniture.
I mean, if you could just see the absolute delicious eye candy that I'm looking at right now. I mean, it is just a rainbow of joy in all your kind of signature patterns. So you can get that explosion into
right.
Your home.
I guess I have an identity of colour, if that's even a phrase, I don't know.
It is now.
But there's sort of go-to colours that I like, and I think they would largely be those complementary contrasts of hot and cold and pinks and greens. I think they're sort of my neutrals, I suppose.
Oh, I love that. Pinks and greens are your neutrals. Brilliant.
Well, they are. I did a house for someone in Mallorca recently, and with a man and a wife, and the woman was fully invested in what my plans were for her home, and the husband was sort of just used to grey and white, I guess. So their bedroom, I sort of gingerly spent a few weeks trying to coerce him into the idea of a pink bedroom.
Oh, yeah, how did that go?
Well, it's fantastic because I've managed to sort of bring him on board but tone the pink down so it's sort of, we're now calling
it... Did you tell him it was beige? Mushroom.
It's basically a sort of warm beige.
Yeah, perfect.
It's an old trick, that one. It always works. It's not pink, darling.
Yeah, but to your point, like, to me, that pink is almost like a neutral.
Yeah.
It's not pink. It's not nowhere near sort of candy pink. It's a very plaster-like pink, which I would far prefer over white or cream.
Yeah, because it's got a lovely softness to it,
yeah.
Hasn't it? And
yeah.
It's a beautiful colour to be in, whereas white can be quite stark and grey can be quite cool.
Yeah.
Pink's got that warmness. So, yeah, I've got quite a lot of pink in my house. In fact, it was really funny. I was talking to Tom about it the weekend, and I do have quite a lot of pink, to be fair. And we're about to do an extension, and he's declared there's no pink in the extension. We're going to see how that goes. But anyway, I said to him, you know, what is it? You know, you've got, are you telling yourself this story that it's a feminine colour?
Right.
And, you know, and actually it was the Victorians who kind of decided that, you know, pink was for girls and blah, blah, blah. And it's all just a construct. And he loves anything that's against a construct. So I thought I could really get on board with this. And then he just went, no, I just don't like it. So if I just don't like pink.
Fair enough. It was a little bit of many parts sort of came together to make the decision. I guess I worked in fashion for 20 plus years. And in that industry, as you, I'm sure you know, it's very relentless. It's very cyclical. It's super fast paced. So you're kind of, you know, well, I was certainly exhausted as it came towards the latter part of that 20 year stretch and the demands of fashion, having to create 4 collections a year and also with the sort of evolution from bricks and mortar stores to online retail, the industry just shifted and I started to fall out of love with it a little bit. So it kind of took 2 years to make the pivot into the industry that I've always loved from afar and sort of dabbled. So yeah, it was definitely a slow sort of mindful shift from one to the next. And I now look back retrospectively thinking that my fashion training, if you like, or my fashion career, it was exactly that. It was training for this. I feel.
Oh, really? So you feel this is where you should be?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I look back now thinking, God, the signs were there. I was, you know, 10, painting my bedroom in Manchester lilac and obsessing about the picture rails colours and the bedspreads. And I definitely had a vested interest in it, but it was just sort of latent and fashion became my first choice, which I think I should attribute to my mum and her way of dressing largely. But she also loved her home and loved saving up to buy something. And it was quite a precious pastime of hers, if you like. She was definitely a heavy influence in terms of how she prepared herself for the day ahead. I was curious and fascinated with her rituals of the bath the night before and painting her nails and all this energy and time that she spent, and then watching the results of that, whereby she'd walk to work because she was a receptionist in an optician's, and she saw it as her duty to look fantastic because she was trying to sell a product, and she thought, if I don't look good, why were you going to trust me?
Yeah.
So she had that very basic, quite smart way of presenting herself. You know, she'd host a party and the wives would be jealous and the husbands would love her. Because she really was this sort of peacock in the room. And back in that time, it was quite rare.
Yeah.
So I was obsessed and fascinated by the effects of that, the positive effects on her and others around her. So it just sort of felt that it was a natural thing for me. If I can create things that have that kind of effect on people, that's what I'd like to do.
Wow, amazing.
And was your house, was your mother a sort of jewel in a fairly plain house, or did she also get the paint out, or was it just you with the lilac in your bedroom?
She didn't have lilac, but she, no, it definitely wasn't plain. But it's funny, isn't it, how I was thinking the other day how, when you mentioned earlier about the colours in this space, how so much of your design DNA, if you like, you carry with you. Mm. So whilst I do try and push things and look at things a different way, I do feel that a lot of what I'm about is rooted in those formative years. So yeah, she had a fascination with pattern and colour and how to put colours together. And it was a textured space. It wasn't minimalistic. They didn't have a huge amount of money. And also back in the 70s, I guess, you sort of did a room and it was done.
Yeah.
And then you didn't touch it. That.
Yeah, there was no changing, was there?
Yeah. Right. You know, we had the same lounge forever and it used to drive me crazy. It was like, can't we buy a new piece?
Yeah.
But I can remember it vividly, the carpet. And I think I've still got elements of those things in my work.
It was quite a flamboyant time there, wasn't it, as well, 70s and 80s. You know, I definitely remember some of my mum's decorating decisions, and there was chintz and some quite Italian
shell-encrusted
lamps. Yeah,
the apple hasn't fallen far from your tree, has it?
But it would not be out of place now, I think.
Right.
Some of the things that you had, certainly things I had then, I remember thinking that would be pretty cool now.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm hopefully about to get passed down a really lovely sort of Berger cane suite. It's a couple of armchairs and a sofa and it's cane. And my mum had it restored and renovated in the 80s. So it's peach fabric with a kind of like China blue piping.
Ooh,
it's like fan detail. Anyway, I was chatting to...
I might just lean against this door. I feel a bit faint.
I was chatting to my friend Sarah at Vine Street Vintage, really cool vintage furniture store in Brighton. And I said, oh, you know, and I'm going to get this and I'm going to reupholster it. She went, oh, no. That
is the colour.
Peach, right. 80s peach and blue is where it's at. That whole kind of 80s vibe with vintage furniture is, I'm not ready. I don't think I'm ready to embrace it quite yet either. But all I'm saying is, it's coming.
Well, we've definitely embraced the 70s, haven't we? I mean, there's corduroy everywhere you look, that rich terracotta, creams, all those colours are coming back. So...
Absolutely,
it's only a matter of time.
And it's my favourite decade for inspiration in fashion and interiors.
In the 70s, it is.
Yeah.
Because your colours, certainly in here, seem much cleaner than I think the 70s colours. So I'm interested, you say this is a work in progress. Is it going to change a lot?
Yeah, I'd like to think that I can sort of, because the difference being, talking about back in the day, I'm the opposite of that, and I can't sit still in a space. It's never finished. It's always evolving. So, yeah, I think I'll give it a bit of a re-haul in terms of colour. I've painted that. I have these oval floor-to-ceiling windows, which are lovely.
They're in the really bright turquoise. I mean, it's really arresting when you walk in. It's such a beautiful colour. And it is a colour I really associate with you as well, that blue,
it's very uplifting colour. Mm. I just don't know if it's a bit jazzy for me at the moment.
I'm fascinated that you're thinking of switching up your colour palette, because you are a designer, I think, first and foremost, who people associate with your, I'm going to say it, absolute genius way of putting quite brave and original colour palettes together. So are you going to be moving away from that? Like, Kate, I can see, is already trying to draw you to some 70s.
Brown! Love a bit
I'm
of brown.
Standing here in between you going, don't do it.
Are you worried I'm heading to the dark side?
Yes, I'm like, can we just have a reality check? Or is it just, you know, still being true to your love of joyful, uplifting, vibrant colours?
Well, I'm very flattered that you think that. In the first place, I guess it's interesting to hear that, because to me it is instinctive colour. It's natural. It's something that I don't really labour over, to any, maybe surprisingly so. It's just sort of, I can't spend hours and days and weeks contemplating the difference between pale grey and dark grey. It's just, you know, I also find when I walk into a room, if I'm doing a project for someone else, I did this yesterday, in fact, went into a new home I'm doing for someone. I said, this room has to be green. I don't know what kind of green, but it's green. And she went, oh. So it just
really
feels quite impulsive.
Wow, yeah. That's fascinating.
And then if you get it wrong, you get it wrong, and it's one of the easiest things to change.
I think that's I think that's such a beautiful thing, because I'm dealing with people all the time who are terrified of colour and terrified of getting it wrong. Mm. And I kind of want to say, look, we don't all get it right all the time. There isn't, and that this fear of the disaster and what people are going to think, what you're saying is it's more important to follow your gut and your heart and be creative. And look, fix it up if it isn't hitting it at the end of it.
I don't ever have any colour rules. I just like light and bright, but not necessarily white. I need colour on the walls, but not necessarily bright colour or dark, intense colour.
What's this colour in here?
This is a farambol grey. No, it's not. I'm lying. Sorry. It's the bedroom's farambol. This is Designer Guild's.
But it's,
I don't know what,
is a soft bluey grey.
It's like a dove grey.
But it picks up, doesn't it? Because you've got pink wall lights and, again, that turquoise wall. So it's, you know, the thing about grey, some people, I'm not naming anybody, but her name does begin with S. Are anyhow quite rude about grey, but it is a very nice kind of background colour, because it's friends with everything, isn't it? So it will reflect. You can warm it up by adding pink, and you can cool it down by putting black against it or lilac.
I mean, I was saying I don't have any rules, but I probably do. And one of them would be, if you're good, for me anyway, it's obviously personal and everyone has their own slant. But for me, I don't really want to sit in a room that's either too brightly coloured or too intensely coloured. So this kind of tone works really well, and then have accents of colour within.
Yeah.
I don't mind the room behind us, which is the sort of candy pink hallway, because it's a space that I'm travelling through. I don't want to sit in a pink lounge, believe it or not, or a bright green bedroom. I want soft colours mostly, and then I pick out woodwork. Like, I hate doors and that are not then considered with the wall colours. So, you know, I'll pop a door colour, for example, or the architrave in to give it that burst of colour. So, yeah, but it's definitely a part of the process of interior design that I think is not to be feared, and it can be relatively easily changed if it's sending you out in hives.
Yeah, exactly, and we none of us want that from our home.
Well, the kitchen's that way.
Right,
let's go this way. So
through
we're going down
the pink
hallway.
Oh, it's so delicious.
I blue just cupboards. Wrote about a book on the blog by Emilio Pimentel-Reed,
He's done this book called Bold British Design. Right. And I was looking through the pictures and I said, oh, the pink of your sitting room is gorgeous. What pink is that? And he said, oh, I've had it matched to my skin tone so that it will always flatter me when I'm here.
Who is this person?
Oh, I thought it was brilliant.
Paint matched to
skin
tone.
We need to flatten him or I'll get lost. We're able to see him. Where have you gone? Oh, there you are.
You've got to really like your skin tone, though.
Well,
you?
It's a soft pink, but I thought it was an interesting idea because, you know, that will flatter you. There you go. So, look, kitchen. Yes.
Come in. Isn't it lovely? Oh, I like this, like, double deep worktop because
like
it means you can get more things on it.
You created it. So, I'm guessing originally this was a huge front room.
Right.
And you've divided it to create this little kitchen.
Absolutely. It was a sad thing to have to do, but it was my partner was coming to move into this space, so it just didn't work. So what we've done is chopped up, if you like, created a bedroom and a kitchen in the space that was originally just a kitchen, a beautiful big open plan kitchen. So there's now a bedroom and bathroom at the front.
That is super cool. Oh, it's got a really healthy lineup of booze as well.
Oh, yes. 47 bottles of vodka and some tonic. Lovely. What time is it?
We can tell what kind of kitchen this is.
There's nothing in the fridge, but there's a lot in the bar.
And also, no, I'm also loving the fact that there's a little store of paintings as well,
yes,
in the corner.
Work in progress.
Work in progress. Brilliant. And artwork and oversized lights and a lamp. And is this all sort of Spanish pottery that I'm spotting?
I've just painted those little pots up there myself in Spain, put them in bubble wrap and hand carried them last week because I thought they'd look nice on the website.
Yes.
Totally.
God, I love that.
We started a collaboration last year to do lampshades and bases with Pookie. And unfortunately, with the coronavirus, we had to halt on the bases that I designed. So we went
to manufacturing or
right.
Yeah.
So what we have now is a sort of two-part collection and the shades are now out and I'm really proud of them. And what I'm going to do is sit them on antique bases that I found and sourced and then they'll go onto the website.
Again, that's just a lovely way of bringing your love of pattern and colour to a lampshade. I think they're so overlooked. Like I quite often say to people, just switch your lampshades. You know,
you could do that seasonally.
Perfectly
can't
nice
you?
Vintage yeah. lamp base or a high street lamp base, but they always come with really ordinary
yeah.
cream shades, don't they?
Mm.
And you can really punk it up with a groovy lampshade.
Yeah, it's
totally.
Kind of overlooked, isn't it? Because, I mean, yes, God, I love a cushion as much as the next person, but that's the kind of obvious route, isn't it? Mm. So, you know, think about your lampshades as something that you can change quite
it's
easily.
So true. I mean, I didn't think about it. I underlooked it for a while. And only because of this collaboration did I start to think about it a lot more. So I think you can group them together and have these little corners of pockets of light. And as you say, they sort of immediately transform, particularly in the winter and the evenings. I mean, these look magical at night.
Oh, look, little bubbles. Fancy pots in the shower. Look at that.
It's all just fabulous. It's all just like up-leveling everywhere, isn't it? That's what I'm kind of really getting from your vibe. Is it's yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, it's a tiled wet room, absolutely got all the things you need, tile, shower, practical. And then it's got wall sconces and a Venetian mirror and oversized Moroccan lanterns.
Right.
Brilliant, because that's so easy to do.
It's surreal having you describe it. I'm kind of freaking out, like, oh.
I'm in here. This is lovely. Okay. What I'm noticing is lots of painted furniture as well.
Yeah, that was a lockdown project, to be fair. I've got that from my mum, for sure. If you go around her house, she'll definitely paint you if you stand still. Like, it's a thing. Like, I don't know why, but I think, I love to paint furniture.
So do you buy, like, junk furniture or new furniture or anything? It doesn't matter.
Well, in this room, the bed is actually new. That's had a little lick of paint. It's probably quite sticky to the touch.
So you painted it this lovely
still.
Sort of gloss. I'm sticking to it. No, I'm not. It's sort of like gloss coral colour.
Exactly.
That is a beautiful colour with a sort of chalky blue bed linen.
Yeah.
And then the wallpaper is similar colours, isn't it? They're parrots, aren't they?
Yeah, that was my sort of first. I mean, again, this room is a room of two halves. It's definitely not finished. But this is the first, the wallpaper that you're looking at. It's one of my designs for Osborne & Little, and it's called Ventura with these sort of rainbow parrots. So that was my first I don't know if it's, you know, necessarily, don't know there's a right order to do things, but that was what I chose to do first. And now I'm going to try and work with that paper as the sort of anchor of the space to dress the windows and everything else.
Yeah, so you pull the colours out from there.
Yeah.
And the motifs.
So I was thinking
things,
like coral, this kind of colour curtain.
Oh, nice. Okay, so you've already sort of pulled the coral from the parrot's tail onto the bed. And then there's those lovely tropical flowers.
Yeah.
Which are more of a peach.
Like a hibiscus-y kind of peach.
That's it. Hibiscus.
So I was thinking maybe that's the sort of one of my fabrics.
Oh, yes, I think so. So this is like a mini leopard, abstract leopard.
Yeah, it's called the ocelot fabric.
I could get on board with ocelots.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it comes in grey.
I don't know what it is. Does it matter what it is? It's a small cat thing.
Yeah.
It's a what?
Yeah. Small cat thing.
Yeah. Oh, it's a, right.
Isn't it?
Okay, you can cut that bit out.
No, leave it in.
What an ocelot is. Oh my God. Oh, it looks fabulous. And then that amazing pop of canary yellow on that rather fabulous chest there, which it's kind of unexpected. That's what I love as well, is it sort of, yes, it kind of coordinates the coral with the blue for sure. But then you've just got that like wild card yellow. I don't know. It just really pops out.
I love a disruptor colour.
That's a happy accident. I'm not going to pretend it was planned. It's just an old piece that I love, don't want to get rid of. And I think that's the thing with my design philosophy. It's not necessarily about everything new and pristine and matching to the nth degree. That would certainly send me crazy. I think you need personality and sort of, not mistakes, but you need to sort of, you know, have fun with it, and you want to live in it, don't you? And it needs to be practical as well as beautiful. I don't know whether, you know, if the budget was unending, would I have that cabinet there? Maybe not. But I like it and I think it works. It's sort of, as you say, a little pop of unexpected colour.
I think that's quite interesting on the terms of budget, because obviously doing up a home is a really expensive process, and it's one that a lot of us do quite gradually. Like you say, old things, you have to work around them, or you pick up something that needs a lick of paint to make it work. But I think that almost creates the most exciting interiors, because sometimes if you can just go out and shop everything from the get-go, it can look overly contrived, can't it? And so that element of making do is sometimes what gives it a little bit of magic, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. And again, it's sort of always been part of my work. I used to make clothes from relatively inexpensive fabrics. And then my goal was to transform them into gowns that would, you know, knock them dead kind of thing. So whether it was beaded or embroidered or printed or dyed, it was that transformation from something humble, you know. I'm not really about glitzy, massive, expensive pieces. I mean, I wouldn't say no to the odd, you know, splurge. But I think, I'm definitely mindful when I'm doing homes for other people as well as myself about where to spend the money wisely.
Well, where do you say then? You got any tips on that? Sorry, I'm going to drill down. When, if you do need to splurge, what's it? Is it art? Is it fabrics? Or
I'm going to be really boring and sensible and say all the things that you don't see.
Oh, yeah.
The sort of behind the scenes stuff. Like if you can spend that time on the, you know, your water and your electrics and
like the heating and
the heating, the lighting, I think that's sorely sometimes overlooked, you know, as well as lamps, to think of how you want to light the space. Do you want dimmers? Do you want low lights, up lights, spotlights? I think all that sort of relatively dull part of the process is important. And you can spend money on that before you even start with cushions and...
But that, it's like good foundations, isn't it? I mean, that comes back to fashion. If you've got good underwear on and you've got the right bra on, then you can, you'll look better in the dress, won't you?
It's so true. If the dress doesn't fit, if it looks great on a hang, you've got to fit.
Yeah.
You know, the zip's got to work. It's got to hold you in. it's definitely the same principles apply. I mean, I'd spend money on the floor. I think nothing looks good on a crappy floor.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you've got great furniture, but your floor's a bit rank.
It's the bones, isn't it? I mean, it comes back to that, you know, Kate Moss looks great in a bin bag because she's got good bone structure and she looks great. But, you know, so you're talking about a house with good structure, good bones, and then you can have fun with perhaps slightly unexpected colours or wild colour combinations. Yeah,
I think, you know, I think you can make something less relatively inexpensive look great if you have got that sort of shell, that envelope of you know, good design.
And this flat does have good bones. I mean, it really does, doesn't it? The windows, the cornicing.
You know, but you also make the point, I think, and I think a lot of people are frightened by this, that you must have fun with it because you're living in it. And I think people get stuck because they think I'm spending, you know, a relatively large amount of money, or if it's paint, which can be cheap, quite a lot of time doing it. And I'm frightened that I won't like it forever, or that it'll be a passing trend, or I'll go off it. So I think people get stuck into very sensible decisions, hence the proliferation of Magnolia in the 70s and grey in the early part of this century.
Yeah, I guess the fear of getting it wrong is a huge factor in decision making. You know, people want practical, value for money, sensible things. And I totally understand that. And I also think if you veer over across into giving it more time and thought and effort, it definitely is a minefield. I mean, I'm an interior designer, as are you, and it's a tough process to even I second guess all the time what I'm buying, where I'm buying it from, how much is it, will it work, will that go with that, is it the right size? I just bought a sideboard, for example, the other day and stupidly didn't measure it at all. And it's like the teeniest thing ever. I was expecting like a...
You think the walls will bend, don't you? I got a chest of drawers and I measured the space for the chest of drawers and was really pleased with myself. I forgot the skirting board. And that centimetre, it won't give.
Well, I'm talking half a metre, not centimetre. It's literally like a Barbie doll chest with my telly on it. I thought it was going to be this very elegant, high... anyway, so yes, it is, you know, even to people that do it as a career and a job, I think it's, you know...
It's a minefield.
It's a minefield, yeah. And it's good to have someone alongside of you, whether that is a hired interior designer who should know more than you, to sort of bounce off and sort of reach some kind of middle ground, if you like.
Yeah.
Oh, hello. Oh, this is great, isn't it?
When you see people's homes, do they start pointing out all the flaws? Is that quite a common thing? Or is it just me?
Because I'm about... That'll just be you.
I'm about to leave my duvet. It's too small for the bed. Just in case you were thinking, oh, we can't measure duvets.
Oh, yes. There's plenty of stuff to distract
now you're mentioning
us away from the size of the duvet.
My mum never... She always told me not to do that, but I'm clearly not listening.
And look at that little tiny orange window. Oh, that's just a fabulous
genius,
little pop, isn't it?
Isn't it? That is genius. Yeah. What a lovely room. You're going to have to talk us through some of the things in here. I mean, first up, the chandelier. Where do you source something as exquisite as that?
Well, it's Murano, and I bought it in a specialist in New York, which sounds very exotic and glamorous.
Very glamorous. I was hoping you were going to say something like that.
Down the flea market around the corner. Yeah. Put it in a car boot. I had a store in New York back in the day, so it actually came from there.
From there? Oh,
well, I bought
amazing.
It for the store and then...
Yes, and then bought it back. I think that's lovely. I think that's brilliant. And then this amazing ostrich feather lamp, which I really associate with you for some reason. I think you must have been it's a really iconic design. It's the sort of gold branch with the leaves being fabulous pink ostrich feathers, and it's totally over the top and it's totally overscaled, and you definitely have to have the right house to fit something so glorious in it.
I guess it's the antithesis of what we were talking about earlier. Oh, make do and make mend and make do. Here comes a big...
Yes, it's an ostrich feather life-size tree lamp, yes.
Completely impractical, but I think it's definitely one of those little moments of a lavish
I
think you need something like that in every room, don't you?
It's super all out. And then again, I suppose more antique lamp bases and mirrors and
But the colours are actually quite muted in here, aren't they? That's a very sort of plaster pink. And what colour would you call that headboard, Sophie?
That's a sort of mouse, isn't it? Like a mouse grey.
Oh, don't say mouse.
Like a mouse. I wondered what she was going to go for. Just laid a little elephant trap for you there.
But you're right, it is very mouse-like.
I think we'll go chestnut mushroom. And again, the soft sort of chalky blue-grey walls.
It's nice, though.
They?
I mean, you're saying that like
you're
I shouldn't...
You're actually standing on my mic.
I got into a tangle. Sorry, I'm pirouetting.
No, I think it's...
No, it's in my skirt.
There we go.
I think what I love about this is it's a much more gentle palette. So gone have the vibrant colours that we've seen elsewhere, and it is these more slightly dirty, slubby colours. Even the shutters aren't the vibrant turquoise. That's more of a kind of ocean tealy colour.
Right.
So the whole thing, the energy is just like brought right down in here, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, but it's the same colours, isn't it? Yes, just muted.
Well, it's going back to that, what's the space for, I guess. It's a place to sleep. That's all I do in here, sadly.
That's another podcast as well. We're getting through them today, aren't we?
But it is Friday and the bar's fully stocked, so you never know. It's not actually, it's Thursday. But, yeah, no, it's a space that's used primarily for sleeping. So that sort of dictates, I think, to a large extent, how you decorate. I want to feel calm.
Yeah, it's
beautiful. I don't really want busy, crazy jolts of colour.
And then the busy pattern that you do have, again, another fabulous wallpaper. It's behind the headboard, isn't it?
It's so behind, yeah. I'm not sort of staring at it.
Yeah.
And I find that quite...
is that a calming wallpaper, is it?
It's quite calming. That multicoloured sort of tropical metallic backdrop paper for me is quite a calm.
Yeah.
But it is because it's sort of soft shades of chocolatey brown, isn't it? And a soft chalky blue,
yes.
Sort of Wedgwoody type blue, isn't
it? So it's metallic silver background, isn't it? It's really lovely. It's a beautiful room.
And that's a good way, actually, in a bedroom, if you're frightened of lots of colour, do it on the headboard because you've got your back to it when you want to be relaxing or you've got your eyes shut.
Yeah. But what's the story then about the neon orange?
Great idea.
Window. And also, Kate, look, I've spotted it here. Yeah. There's a stripe of it on the door too. And again, it's quite unusual architecturally to have this little window that looks like it's 6 feet up the wall. You couldn't really open it or see out of it. It's kind of like a foot and a half square, and it's neon orange.
Do you know why it's there?
Is it an old bathroom window?
This was. You used to come in here, and this whole section we're studying was a sort of shower bathroom to this bedroom. And I didn't like it, so I knocked down the bathroom, and then there was a little...
But I love that. I love that because, I mean, some people would have just blocked that up, I'm guessing. But you thought, you know what? I love that little random window. I'm going to keep it, and then I'm going to paint it a really bright colour.
That's what brings the character, isn't it?
I love it. It is slightly bonkers, Matthew.
Well, it's like a belt on a dress or a shoe on an... You know, it's that sort of... Or the lipstick to...
Again, I think what's really interesting about your interiors is it's almost vetoed now in the interior design industry, but I'm holding on to it because people know what it means. Eclectic. Mm. It's a very eclectic aesthetic in here. From the very kind of like deco-esque kind of mirrored furniture, then there's this incredible Italian vintage painted beautiful cupboard, and then there's gilt mirrors, modern mirrors, vintage chandeliers.
Don't forget the feathers.
And of course the feathers. How do you decide how to combine so many different design references? How do you get it to work?
That's a brilliant question. I guess to first of all be fearless in sort of that concept that it doesn't all have to match. That to me is perhaps the only no-no for my style, that if everything is bought to match. So I sort of go rub against that concept and think of things that wouldn't necessarily be paired together. And that's where I think you get interesting mixes and juxtapositions, whether it's wood, metal, glass. I think you've just got to have a sensitive eye and also not rush it. I don't think you can create this look in 24 hours or even a week. I think you've got to spend time. And it's a lot of what you see here is, you know, sourced over years. Not only is most of it old and antique, but also it's been with me for a long, long period of time. And then I might just add something that takes me as I'm going. But that's really the only process. It's not really overly...
You're not intellectualising
So it's very organic, and it's buying stuff you love and perhaps thinking afterwards where you might put it or moving it from room to room rather than specifically looking for pieces, or a mix of both?
I guess it's a bit of both. You know, like, there's definitely things now in the lounge I'm thinking, right, I need a new sofa, and so that obviously happens. But I think when it comes to decorative items, there's got to be that pull. No one needs an Italian painted shrine on their bedroom cabinet necessarily. So that's been bought just for that
because you love it.
Yeah. And I knew the tones would work well. And so, yeah, I think it's sort of that passion of, you know, certainly when you're dressing a space, when you're at that final step of how do I now make it look like it reflects me? And, you know, I think you can be as free as you like.
With you, as many other designers, it's so instinctive that you can't really explain it because you just know when it works. Whereas someone who's perhaps less creative will go by the rules and think, well, I've got a big bit there, so I must have a small bit there and an old bit there, so a new bit there. And
I guess I'm just not
drawn to it.
The kind of person that bigs up my own stuff, rightly or wrongly. I never did it in fashion when I was interviewed backstage. And, you know, I felt like I should be going, oh, I'm fabulous. And did you think, you know, but I couldn't. I had this really sort of British, oh, thank you, do you like it? I wasn't, you know, able to, I have to really think it through to sort of sell it. It's not my natural, you know, I feel far more flattered than anything else. When you say you love it, I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, amazing.
Rather than, of course you love it. Of course you bloody love it. So everybody should love it. It's fabulous.
I bet you could tell us plenty of stories of people like that too. Get the vodka out.
It's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, that is definitely. That's the one we actually want to hear. Okay, so we're back in the, where are we going, drawing room, lounge, living room? We're back in this wonderful room, and I know you'll all be dying to see pictures. So rest assured, there will be plenty of them on our blogs. I'm madaboutthehouse.com, and she's sophierobinson.co.uk, and also on our Instagram feeds. Mad About the House again, and Sophie Robinson Interiors.
And you will also certainly be wanting to follow Matthew himself on Instagram, where he's aptly Matthew Williamson. Do look out for Matthew's upcoming projects. What have you got in the pipeline?
Well, I guess my priority now is building my website.
Oh, good. So we'll get links.
MatthewWilliamson.com.
Indeed.
Now, don't forget to check out our fabulous Facebook group, The Great Indoors Podcast, and do nip onto your podcast app if you can and leave us a little review, especially if it's as lovely as AJ Hardy's, who says, I just found this podcast 2 weeks ago and I can't get enough of it. It's brimming with advice and inspiration and I highly recommend it. Thanks, AJ Hardy. Tell your friends. We recommend it too.
And finally, thanks so much to Matthew for showing us around your incredible home.
Oh, not at all. It's an absolute pleasure. It's been lovely to chat.
Well, we'll be back soon when you've redecorated it. Have a look, so get ready.
Thanks also to our producer, Kate Taylor of Feast Collective. And thanks to AJ Hardy and all our lovely listeners.
And we'll see you in the great indoors. I've just clocked the fact that I literally got dressed in the dark this morning and we're in a fashion designer's house. Just having a bit of a moment now. I should have perhaps put more thought into that, shouldn't I? No, as you were, you carry on.
You look fabulous.
I'm just going to go outside for some air.